haven't heard from her for a while, and she's been coming to 10 by 9 for years. She is a great advocate of 10 by 9. She's also a very gifted storyteller. Please, big warm welcome for Louise Nealon.
I'm going home for Christmas on Friday. My family live on a dairy farm in Kildare, but our exact address remains something of a mystery to even our closest neighbours. Every year, people's guesses come flying in on Christmas cards, with only the rare few getting the right answer. We live in a tiny townland called Corcoranstown, where the cow population greatly outnumbers the people. I've only met one person who talks about Corcoranstown like it's the centre of the universe. That person is my great-aunt Peggy. "How is all in Corcoranstown?" Peggy would ask whenever she landed in the door on Christmas Eve, as if she was talking to the citizens of a great metropolis, and not my brothers and sisters and I, as wide-eyed in our pyjamas, looking at the tin of roses she was carrying under her arm. It took me a few decades of growing up to realise that Peggy wasn't just visiting us for Christmas. She was coming home. I grew up in the same farmhouse as she did. Her family moved from Lacan, County Mayo in the 1930s to Corcoranstown, County Kildare, where she was born. Peggy was the baby of the family. Her brother Peter took over the farm from his father, and Peter's son, my dad, Tommy, carried on working the land. Whenever I talk to my dad about Christmas, he always says the same thing. Peggy was our Santy. There is something about a 6'2" farmer in his late 60s saying the word Santy that makes me imagine the 6-year-old version of him, nose pressed against the window, waiting for Peggy's car to come down the driveway. Even back then, he knew that wherever Peggy went, Santy wasn't far behind. He got a toy gun and holster for Christmas one year, and he was made up. "Peggy is my godmother too," he says proudly, as though Peggy had a choice in the matter. I always imagined Peggy, a midwife in the rotunda, delivering Dad as a baby and going, "I'll have that one." Every Christmas, Peggy stayed next door at my Grandma Beattie. Grandma and Peggy were more like sisters than sisters-in-law. They got on great, but they could fall out at the drop of a hat. One year, they were arguing about what time to leave on Christmas Day to go for dinner in our Aunt Mary's. Peggy was the one who was driving and insisted in leaving in the afternoon. Grandma kept saying that they had to leave earlier on in the morning, and Peggy muttered under her breath, out of the range of Grandma's hearing aids, "Well, she can stick a feather up her hole and fly there herself." Peggy was the best person to be around on Christmas. Not least because she always had a mobile pub in the boot of her car. She asked me what my drink was when I was 12. And was disappointed when I said Club Orange. There are many legendary stories about the pub and the boot of Peggy's car, but my favourite is the one that our local priest, Father George, told during the homily at Peggy's funeral last August. She crashed the car badly and was fairly shaken up, but before the car was towed away, she called a guard who arrived at the scene aside and said, "Listen." "There are a few bottles in the boot. Would you mind shifting them and bringing them back to the barracks with you?" The young guard transferred the clinking bottles of Grey Goose, Green Spot Jemison whiskey, and the array of mixers from Peggy's boot into the squad car and brought them back to the station for her to collect the next day. It was difficult to argue with Peggy. She had a natural air of authority. She met her best friend Mary while nursing, and the two of them became the first women to take out a mortgage together on a house in Dublin. She used her skills as a midwife to cycle around the city, delivering babies for women in difficult circumstances, and was one of the many names included in the book Heroines of Dublin. Peggy travelled the world, but she loved her home. She was one of the founding members of Kappa Camogie Club, a team on which my sisters still play. She played golf and always put a bet on a horse or two at the Galway races. She was very close to her sister, Sister Mary Vianney, a nun in Belmullet, and her cousin Father Seamus. She had a huge grow for the West, the place where her family came from. The thing I remember most about Peg is the many life lessons I learned from her while playing cards. She conducted legendary marathons of card nights everywhere she went. The condolences on the RIP.ie page were full of comments like this one. I have such happy memories of this lady. She came to our house to play cards with a bag full of sweets. I always hoped that she would win the game as she would share her winnings with us. And this one. I have fond memories of losing money to her at poker almost every time I played. Her wit and sense of fun would make you forget that you were losing the game. Peggy was waked at home in Corcoranstown last August. The house was full of people who came to pay their respects. Neighbours who had children delivered by her in the rotunda, or were the children she delivered, now in their 50s and 60s. A gentleman came to the door who turned out to be her neighbour, a man she'd spoken of fondly, but who he'd never met. And we got to hear stories of the neighbour Peg, who was just as kind and generous and full of devilment as she was with us. I was on duty to serve tea and coffee during the wake, but gravitated towards my niece, 5-year-old Sophie, who was standing up on the couch and looking out the window, fascinated by the parking system that was operating at the end of our drive. My dad had opened up a field and the neighbours were wearing high-vis jackets, directing cars in and out of the farm safely. "Why are there so many people here?" Sophie asked. My sister Sarah had briefed me on how to deal with Sophie's questions around death. "Tell the truth, but try not to get bogged down in the specifics of it all." "Because it's a party," I said. "Why are we having a party for Peggy if she's not here?" she asked. "Well, she's in heaven, and we're celebrating that." Her eyes narrowed. "So she's not here then?" "No, Bet." "Okay." She thought about it for a moment before pointing to the front room where Peggy was laid out in the coffin. "Then what's in the brown box?" Later, Sarah told me that Sophie asked her the same question. And when Sarah tried her best to explain, Sophie replied, "Okay, the box is the road to heaven." She was happy. She finished the story for herself. The stories we tell ourselves hold so much power, especially at this time of year. We take stock of our lives while we sit at home on Christmas Day, scrolling through our phone at other people's curated versions of festive fun. We think about the horrific atrocities that are happening in the world. We miss the ones we love who are far away or who are no longer in our lives for one reason or another. As a 33-year-old, unmarried, childless woman, a strange fear creeps in that my Christmases will look a lot different to other people's in years to come. And then I remember the legacy that our Peg has left behind. The way my dad face changes when he talks about Christmas as a child. I'm able to see the magic that Peggy nurtured in him, a magic that is alive and well when I see him talking about Santy with his grandchildren. Peggy was very proud when I told her that I wanted to be a writer and often asked me to sit down with her to chronicle some of her adventures. We never got around to doing it. And so, all I want for Christmas this year is to stand in front of a 10x9 audience and tell you about my great aunt Peggy, who made Christmas special for 90 years. Her magic lives on in Corcoranstown, Gurb Míle Maith.
Louise, I am so glad to have you back at the 10x9 microphone, and thank you for emailing me today. That was a wonderful story. Some of you may be familiar with Louise's work. We're currently expecting her second novel, I hope, soon. Her first was called Snowflake, and you may have seen it in Waterstones or other bookshops, wherever you get your books, assuming you can read. One doesn't like to make assumptions. Okay. Oh, sorry.